And it's time for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101. Bruce got a brand new book to talk about with us this week called Fit for America.
This is a very different book. And in fairness to all our listeners, some people may find this a little bit of a slog. It took me a while to read it, but it's because at the end of every 20-page chapter, I had so much to think about, to ruminate about. And I think I can give you a pretty good example as to why. This is taken from Robert Kilbourne Root. He leveled charges of professionalism against the players, talking about college football writing. Amateurs they are, according to the letter of the code, these 30 football squads. But could there be anything less amateur in its real essence than present-day college football? Even the student sections were tainted by crass professional organization. Root pointed out the enthusiasm of the undergraduate spectators who filled the sonorous cheering sections has for many weeks before the game been artificially stimulated by an organized system of propaganda. That was written in 1924. Okay. This book is an intellectual study of Major John L. Griffith, and who was the first commissioner of the Big Ten, one of the first presidents of the NCAA, a longtime booster of physical education. He taught at some small colleges in the northern Midwest. He was a coach. He went to the University of Illinois, and in 1917, the United States Army began the conscription for World War I. One-third of all applicants were referred to light duty, and one-half of all applicants were completely refused for their physical condition. So he believed, and he became a champion for the rest of his life, that the best way to promote good health in America was team sports, particularly football. He was particularly interested in the health of boys, the young men that he thought would lead the country. He was big on pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. But he founded the Athletic Journal, which author Matt Lindemann found a stack of, and no one had really paid much attention. Founded in 1921, ended his affiliation with it when he died in 1944. And it was a mouthpiece for college football, for certain other interests. But it began a debate which has raged apparently among the military people in the U.S., Great Britain, Germany, and other countries. Is military drill less effective in promoting the kinds of skills that officers and soldiers need than competitive sports? The major reason that the college people thought this was true, that it should be not military drill, is that no one likes drill. No one likes repetition. No one wants to be marching around all the time. No one wants to be, and that the skills you develop playing basketball, football, track and field, lacrosse, ice hockey, all the sports that he thought were good for you, were also, he thought, conducive to building better soldiers physically and mentally. The idea that team sports teach you how to work in a team environment. Now, Griffith was not one of those people who said that football is like war or war is like football, and I would not want to mischaracterize him that way. He had some pretty neo-fascist ideas and some sort of ugly nationalist ideas during the course of his life. But he oddly often found himself on the side of people who did not favor conscription, did not favor a military draft, not just to protect the football programs of the Big Ten, but because he felt that would lead to the kind of militaristic societies that were present in Prussia and later in Germany, that if you had a huge, constant, standing military, that the freedom of your country was in danger, as he had seen in countries where the military got too strong. But he believed that if you had constant physical education from early ages on and people stayed fit, that in times of need, in times of war, you could find these people and they would be, and you could raise an effective army. Now, this puts him a little bit beyond and a little bit after the early YMCA movements, the early muscular Christianity movements, but it did put him often in conflict with very important people. He was able to help form, and he did this for the military, their original training programs, the Army's original training program and the Navy V5 program, which is famous for its ability to train athletes. But there was a constant war between people who felt that it shouldn't be based on team sports and people who thought it should be. Now, in part, again, this comes from a Democratic side of things, and I mean Democrat, obviously with a small D here, not a party, but a Democratic notion that you don't want an army that is composed completely of people who played college football or went to college. Sometimes people say, well, that's, you know, we need more educated people, but we need to remember that at the time Griffith is writing the Athletic Journal, and the time Griffith is an administrator and all these various things, it started out only 2% of people went from high school to college. By the time he's done, it's only 16, 18, 20%. It's not really until after World War II, and Griffith died in 1944, the day he was given a 5-year extension as president of the Big Ten, commissioner of the Big Ten, that college became something that more people did. The GI Bill being, of course, the main reason for that, but also the evaporation of many jobs and a less of a need of certain skills that provided for good livelihoods, for decent middle-class living standards that existed before the war that didn't afterwards. What Lindemann does in his book is do a very exhaustive year-by-year look at all the things that Griffith did. And in the end, and I hope we'll have him on because I want to ask him if he thinks he would have liked him. In many ways, John L. Griffith was a remarkable man. In other ways, I think he was an anachronism well before his time. But what I did not know, and I had no inkling of this, and I don't claim to be any kind of a sports historian or expert, is just how often there were odd alliances. When he hated the fascists, he hated the communists, he hated Roosevelt's New Deal. As soon as we were at war, he was Roosevelt's biggest backer. I mean, he was in many ways a classic American conservative of high ideal and high principle. So I'm not knocking him that way. But there was the notion that he favored an American elite, that only the guys who had been gone to college in the Midwest and played in these big football games would be the right kind of leaders. Because at the same time he's doing this, Chicago, which was a powerhouse under Amos Alonzo Stagg, drops football. The Ivy League starts to de-emphasize sports because of the creeping professionalism. And when the Southeast Conference comes in and starts offering athletic scholarships, which Griffith was completely against and he thought was anathema to sportsmanship, we see that the era of arena building and big football began the march to get us to where we are now. And boy, I'm telling you, somebody in the NFL studied this and saw exactly how the Big Ten did it and said, wow, we can do that for the pros. Because if you think how in 1970 the NFL was an afterthought compared to what it is today, college football in the 1930s was an afterthought, and it's no afterthought today. No. So this, it's a remarkable book, and I would encourage people to read this book, Fit for America. But I would encourage them to read it a chapter at a time and ruminate and think about this. This is a book that really you want to think about. It's very eye-opening.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. What's ahead next week?
Next week, we're going to talk about collisions. And I hope I'm going to get this book read in time to talk to Upton Bell before we read it. It's about how much Don Shula and Johnny Unitas hated one another. Hmm. Johnny Unitas said that if Don Shula was on fire, he wouldn't pee on him to put it out. They hated one another, and of course, Shula was Unitas' coach in Baltimore after Unitas made the team and Shula got cut because he wasn't good enough. And his relationship with Weeb Eubank, I've only read about 25 pages in, but it's really good so far.
Excellent. Look forward to that next week. Sports Lit 101 every Wednesday here on Downtown.